Today, on the Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have a unique guest, Mr. David Asper. Now, many of you may have heard that name before and are surprised because you didn't know he played basketball. Well, he hasn't. David is a prominent Winnipeg businessman and lawyer. He's best known for his significant community contributions and entrepreneurial ventures. He served significant roles as chair of the Asper Foundation and dean of the University of Manitoba Faculty of Law. He is a recipient of the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal for community service and was appointed as the Queen's Counsel in Manitoba. Oh, and he's also a member of the Blue Bomber Hall of Fame, class of 2017. His list of activities and accolades is vast. However, he's joining us today to share the story of how he brought the Winnipeg Sea Bears and professional basketball back to Winnipeg. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here, Darcy.
So I know that you're a long time listener because, you know, for those who don't know or didn't know before, you obviously brought the Sea Bears here. And so as part of you bring the Sea Bears here, you went and started researching the basketball community. And just around that time, or not so long after, we just started the podcast. And so I know that you're one of our few loyal listeners, or at least you used to be last season. So to have you on is an honor. And, you know, I know that you're ready to go.
Well, I think, I mean, I am. And I was just re-listening to some episodes. And I think it's an amazing thing what you and Basketball Manitoba are doing. It was very, very informative for me, both to sort of get a sense of the basketball community, the current basketball community, but also the historic, to sort of laugh a little bit about, you know, when you get Colleen Dufresne on and some of the old battle axes. And by the way, the Ross Wedlake, I think he was the first, wasn't he?
Number one.
Well, when I watched that one, I said, you know, leaving aside basketball, I said, I love Ross Wedlake. Like, I want him to be by my side all the time, dealing with all the my life, because he would be an amazing guy that would get everything out of the way, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's so yeah, it was extremely interesting and valuable to me, both to sort of reconnect with the historical part, but also to hear, you know, the younger and more modern, significantly elevated state of the basketball community in Manitoba. But I would say, Darcy, more than that, what you've been able to do, which is so fantastic, is storytell. These are human stories. Of course, they relate to basketball and experiences in basketball, but it's really cool listening to, you know, personal, individual, team stories. And even I was listening to Randy Cassano's interview the other day. And how toward the end of it, he confessed to, you know, a significant change that he would have made about his coaching style, which I thought was, you know, a very brave thing. It's a, you know, to show weakness or sort of to show error like that, you know, means that I think you're connecting and you're making it a safe spot, and that's of value. So, yeah, I've deeper than you think, probably. I've paid a lot of attention to what's going on in these podcasts.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I appreciate you saying that, because that is one thing that we set out to do, is just tell the human story, right? Everybody knows about how many wins they've had or what type of, you know, that's stuff you can find online. And that's how most people know people. Oh yeah, that's the person who coached there, but they don't know them. And I think that's the power of this this medium and just what we're doing. And so I again, you know, for Adam for allowing this to happen and supporting it, and it's been really fun. I've got to interview some legends, and so it's been great, and happy to have you on this podcast. But you know, I kind of joked in your intro about you're not a basketball guy, so I have to ask this question. Have you ever played, like, you know, middle school or in high school or any level in your entire life? Have you played basketball?
Other than recreationally in school as a pretty young person, answer is no. It was not my sport.
So what was your sport?
Well, oddly enough, my first organized sport was speed skating.
Okay.
And I was actually pretty good at it. And then I had a crisis. Maybe I was 10 years old or something, but I was representing Manitoba at a Canadian Outdoor Championship. And there was a very, very strong skater in my age group who was the guy to beat. And I was beating him. And I came around the home stretch. I think it was a 400 meter race. I was 10 years old. You'd think that you think I'm still a little traumatized by it when I tell, and I come around the corner and I'm in the lead. I'm going to beat this guy. And there was quite a bit at stake for a 10 year old, and I fell.
Wow.
And I watched that guy go by me. And then at that stage, Manitoba at the time had some really amazing speed skaters who went on to Olympic glory, the Burka family. I had to make a choice about lifestyle, food, nutrition, training, all that kind of stuff. And they were very candid with me and my parents. And they said, okay, you probably have the skill, the innate skill. But to get to the next level, you're going to have to commit. And this is what it means. And
I'm all right.
No, I said, no, yeah, we're good. So I went into hockey. So I played hockey, and I played all the way through to junior B.
Nice.
And I played football.
Okay.
Those are my sports.
Well, on the note of football, before we press record, I know what I know about you. And I always ask all the guests, hey, is there anything missing? I read my bio and you said, there's lots of things we could have thrown on there. And there was something that I omitted on there. And you're like, Hall of Fame. And I was like, what? And then you're showing me the ring. So how the heck did this? Tell us real quick about the Bomber Hall of Fame.
Yeah, people, it's funny. My whole experience with the Blue Bombers is very vivid in my mind, except that it's 24 years or more ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I started in 1986 as a young criminal defense lawyer. And Cal Murphy, who was the general manager of the team, got me involved helping players who were in legal difficulties.
Got it.
In the late 90s, the football club had gone completely bankrupt and was literally going out of business. And the provincial government was prepared to put together a bailout package, and Gary Doer was the premier at the time. And I'd known Gary for a long time, and we were both big Bomber fans, and he asked if I would go in and lead the restructuring of the football club. So I did that in 2000, we had to turn around a bad situation with the Bombers. And I did that. I did that on, pretty much for 12, 13 years until we got the new stadium built. The last thing I did with Brock Bulbuck and Gene Dunn and other people on the board, we put in place the Wade Miller and Mike O'Shea and Kyle Walters. And that was sort of the last thing we did. And then we moved on. But in the meantime, I also led the effort to get a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And my plan A in pro sports was to own the Bombers and to build the new stadium.
Got it.
People, it's funny, people see where the stadium is now, but they completely forget that the proposal that was originally presented and accepted by the premier was at Polo Park.
Mm-hmm.
The stadium was never going to be at the U of M. It was going to be at Polo Park. I don't even remember what happened to get it so off the rails. anyway, I've had a long history associated with the Bombers, and I'm super proud of that. And yeah, I got my Hall of Fame ring there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, I mean, the Bombers, they run deep here. My mom is a super fan, is what you would call her, like watches the game. She will go camping and then watch the game. Like, she's that kind of fan, and so obviously you know, we're here because of the sea bears. And
well, but I was going to say though,
go ahead, yeah.
when we were doing the research, so I mean, people need to, you know, remember, maybe you'll get to it. I was a partner in the Winnipeg Thunder, mm-hmm. When they were playing, and I was very lucky to see Sam Cates lead that and mm-hmm. how he did that. But when we were doing some of the research for the Blue Bombers and for mm-hmm. a new stadium, it was really interesting to come to understand how people sort of associate their civic identity with the Bombers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how deep that that relationship can go. It's you know, we're nowhere near that with the Sea Bears, obviously we're new, but it's a, you know, it's a real marker,
mm-hmm.
You know, to be mindful of, as we hopefully build and grow our business.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. That's a very great point. And, you know, obviously we're going to talk a lot about the community aspect and that connection to the community, but this podcast is about origin stories. Right. And so you mentioned the Thunder a little bit. You mentioned the Bombers. You mentioned, hey, you know, that was plan A, own the Bombers. But we're sitting here now because of the Sea Bears. And so can you, you know, give us the backstory, share the origin story of.
Well, if you go back to the. So go back to the Thunder, my experience with the Thunder, because, you know, I'm not a basketball person. What I did see with the Winnipeg Thunder, though, was a lot of people very jacked
mm-hmm.
about a very entertaining event. Memorably entertaining. And then I spent, as I said, a long time rehabilitating the Blue Bombers and seeing sort of that. And it was quite by chance. I was talking with my brother, generally about sports, sports rights, what was going to happen, what were the, you know, sports on the rise. And he said, well, why don't you have a look at this CEBL
mm-hmm.
that's sort of on the rise in Canada. And you know, he told me how much basketball was on the rise and sort of the number of Canadians going to the NBA and playing pro around the world. And I started to dig into CEBL. I was very interested in its Canadian ratio.
Mm-hmm.
I then started noodling around looking at Winnipeggers who were at or playing pro level ball, and I was really surprised
mm-hmm.
at how many there are, because I started, you know, in my mind thinking, okay, well, if CEBL is going to come to Winnipeg, it's ideally you have some local flavor. You want to sort of be able to say to young people, you can play pro in your hometown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing community builder, and it's an amazing, you know, business marker.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to win in the CEBL, like the CFL, actually, you have to have very, very strong Canadians,
mm-hmm.
if not the best Canadians,
mm-hmm.
Which I loved, because it's generally promoting Canadian basketball and showcasing players on a Canadian North American stage where they may be closer to under the nose of the NBA or G League.
Mm-hmm.
And the U Sport component.
Yeah, that's big time.
Is huge. So anyway, I mean, I sort of went through all these generic kind of thoughts. You know, I was very mindful of the experience I'd had with the Thunder, and I called Mike Morreale. I just called him out of the blue, and I said, "Why aren't you in Winnipeg?" And then, coincidentally, and I'm going to mix up my time frame here, but there was Chad Posthumus did an interview, I think with Sawatsky or Hall or some one of the guys at the Free Press. And I think Chat had been playing in Ottawa, and he was sort of in the article pining for Winnipeg to have a team.
Yeah.
And again, as I say, I called Morreale and I called Mike and I said, you know, what about Winnipeg? And the big issue, you know, Mike had, they'd wanted to be in Winnipeg sooner, but the big issue was where to play.
Yeah.
And that was a huge issue for us. And we, you know, we looked at, we were very close to playing at Investors Group Athletic Center, U of M. You know, in theory, it could have enough seats. But then two things happened. Jason Smith, our team president, is a producer. And he was looking at Investors Group from a game production perspective. And it's limited. I mean, it's just, I'm not going to beat around the bush. It's got limitations. And then at the same time, the provincial government and the city government, we were coming out of COVID and everybody's talking about bring people downtown, downtown revival, everything else. And we sort of threw a Hail Mary, and I got a hold of Mark Chipman and Jason got a hold of Kevin Donnelly. And we said, okay, like, is this even discussable with you folks? And then they were open to it. We were surprised.
Yeah.
But as soon as that door opened, then we knew it was going to cost us a ton more. But we felt that we had a better chance of putting on enhancing player experience, getting slightly larger crowds, and putting on a great show, an entertaining event. And so that was sort of the last card that fell. And once that happened, then we went ahead and you know, did the deals with the CEBL.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, I have a little bit of insight here, obviously. You know, I know Jason, and I actually remember a conversation. He called me and he said, you know, give me the pros and cons of doing it at Investors Group versus here. And we talked for about 20 minutes because I have a background in events and obviously my basketball experience. And the fact that it's at the Canada Life Center, obviously everyone knows that's been to games and seen stuff, is how special it is, especially you know, the standard of the league essentially has been elevated because of, you know, the work that you guys have done and how much Winnipeg has supported the team. But I want to kind of go back a little bit. So that all took place when it came to, you know, hey, those are the steps that kind of got you to this place. But I know that it was somewhat of a time crunch to actually get the, like, it was a push. Like, this was close to maybe not happening, am I overspeaking there, or is that kind of the case? Like, talk us about the timelines and some of the pressure or things that had to get done. I know Jason was working his butt off, and many other people were as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, before I tell you about the time crunch, the other point about Canada Life Center that wasn't just about downtown. When I canvassed the basketball community broadly, everybody to a person said, play central, play somewhere central.
Yep.
And I actually drove from Maples. I drove it to IGAC, to Investors Group, to experience what those people were going to experience. And I said, there's no chance I would drive that.
Yeah.
So that was another thing. So, time. Yeah. I mean, we had things all lined up, in what we thought would be a manageable timetable. And then a series of other things happened within the league that kind of pushed off an us being able to announce until the end of November. And the thing that we did not appreciate fully, we knew it, but we didn't really understand it, was that, you know, on November 30th, you go into December 1st. December 1st, before you know it, you're into holiday season. Before you know it, you're into January. And the wheel of time is turning. And all of a sudden, there's free agency and all of a sudden training camp. And you have to hire a staff.
Yeah.
You have to hire a whole staff. You got to get players. You got to sell tickets. You have to, I'm going to be facetious, but, you know, it sort of got to the point where Jason was running around in between games looking for jugglers and stuff. Like, what are we going to?
Yeah.
Because we just did not understand the enormity of what we were getting into. And it's a great testament. One thing I say publicly, which is our staff, who were largely completely inexperienced in this level of activity, bravely stared it down and succeeded. The second thing people don't know, and I don't want to be, you know, it's not, I don't think it's a secret, but Jason, once training camp and the season really started, Jason had a medical issue with his eye.
Mm.
He still managed, you know, we called him the one-eyed bear, lovingly. But, you know, so we were in this massive scramble from November through to May. Then training camp happens. Then you got a team.
Yeah.
You got all these players now around. And then, you know, happily, but with massive stress, people embraced what we were doing. We're recording this late December. We celebrated our 1 year anniversary on November 30th, a few weeks before we're recording this. And Jason and I sort of looked at each other and went, oh, here we go again. we're getting ready for the 24 season. But the good news is we know what's coming now.
Correct. Absolutely. No, that's big time. I'm just going to ask this question directly. Sea Bears. So that's a very unique name. It is also, I don't know who did the artwork, if that was a league thing, but it's quite the popular logo now. People are absolutely loving it. It's one of those logos you look at and you instantly like, that's cool. Where did the name come from? Who came up with it? Just tell us a little bit about that.
I'm going to try to show you exactly. I was at the zoo. I was at an event at the zoo. I can't find my picture. I can't find my picture on my phone. I was at the zoo and I was in the Journey to Churchill exhibit.
Yeah.
And the bears were swimming around and, you know, it was an amazing thing. And I started taking pictures of these bears. And one bear swam right up to the window and I can't find it, but and I snapped a picture of that bear, and that bear looked almost like that those colors. Right. And so we were playing around and we were thinking something to do with bears. You know, there were a million other names we were thinking about. Do you want to hear the one?
I definitely want to hear some of the names. So,
This is Jason and I having fun, but we started looking at teams that are doing innovative things, and of course we got led to the Savannah Bananas, that are a baseball team. Okay, you've got to look at the Savannah Bananas. And I said, we should be the Coconuts. And our chant, our crowd chant is going to be, let's go nuts. Let's go nuts. And everybody's going, no.
Yeah, everyone's like, yeah.
No, yeah. No, we're not doing that. So anyway, we started playing around with, you know, the bear, yeah, and the sea bear and the polar bear. And then Jason went online and found the old TV nature series Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom had actually done an episode on polar bears and referred to them as sea bears. So we then looked up the origin story of the polar bear and found that its Latin name, when it was first encountered by explorers, and so they had to classify it as a genus, was Ursus maritimus, which translates to sea bear.
Interesting.
And you know, we thought, well, that's an interesting way of describing a polar bear. And it gives you, because I mean, a million people started saying,
bear?
Like, it gives you an opportunity to describe that background.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope, it's my hope that as we continue to develop the brand, we can develop learning pathways into the bear itself, its habitat, northern mm-hmm. Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are all kinds of interesting indigenous legends around Nanook and the mm-hmm. bear. And the funny thing is that when we mocked it up and created the artwork, how quickly people wanted it. Whatever we made, like even before we trademarked it or did anything, we bootlegged a whole bunch of t-shirts and hoodies. And everybody wanted it.
Yeah.
That's it was kind of by fluke. And
yeah.
And literally, as I say, I've got a picture on my camera that almost looks exactly like the logo. Mm-hmm. That was a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's I think some of the older guys, or not even old guys, I guess, I don't know. Am I an old guy now? I don't even know. I'm 41, but I remember the thunder. I was a kid in the crowd and I remember how exciting it was. And obviously we all know that, like, they have like the polar bear thing, right? They weren't called the sea bears, but that was part of their logo. I remember once everyone kind of knew, like, Winnipeg was getting a team, but we didn't know the name yet. And everyone was, hey, are they going to do this? Are they going to do that? And I think it's the perfect kind of, like, it just fits, man. Like, it's perfect. I think that's why people are like, this is it. Like, now the name threw you through something, but the logo people loved. And now the name, because it's so unique, is perfect. You know,
Thank you. I mean, it's like the business itself. It's a huge risk. And, mm-hmm. And like I say, you have to be careful that what I like, or what Jason likes, or what anybody, you know, I mean, might not be what the public at large likes.
Correct.
You have to be humble enough to know that.
Correct.
But like I say, when we made up some mock merch, and then we started looking at potential uniforms, and people really liked it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Again, it's part of our overall gratitude that, you know, we tried something and people liked it, and, you know,
yeah,
that's a happy thing.
Well, like, you know, if we're being honest here, people liked a lot of stuff about the franchise, a lot of stuff about just the whole experience. I want to just fast forward to the first game, because I spoke with Coach Taylor, I spoke with Simon Hildebrandt, I've spoke with many people I actually interviewed them recently, and obviously speaking with people who were there in the community, you know, I know people who've gone to NBA games and said this was a pro experience, and I know the players themselves, especially the Winnipeg guys, were just I mean, I don't even want to speak for them, but I think I have the same sentiment, even though I wasn't running onto the floor, to be able to run out there in front of friends and family in an arena that's is packed with people cheering and just being so involved. I had a suspicion, a very strong one, that that would be the case, that Winnipeg would come out and support. But how did you feel when you started, you know, you're leading up to the game, ticket sales, you know what they are, but to see the actual fans' reaction and being in the arena, what was that like for you?
It was, to me, it was kind of being made to feel like a speck of sand on a beach. You know, like, this is the thing about pro sports that I've learned, is that if you do it well, you create something, you create a framework, you create an opportunity for players, for fans, for coaches. And then if you do it well, you can sort of give it over to the fans and to the people and to the players.
Yeah, interesting.
And let them make it theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking back actually about my memories of the season, and I do remember how sort of, as I say, humbled and sort of shocked I was at that first game, and how powerful it was for a lot of people. But I spent my problem is I don't have a ton of specific memories about the season, because we were so focused on wanting to get things right and get feedback from individual people and not have to sort of rely, although we did do surveys, I wanted to know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. And, you know, take that first game, for example. We were pounding the music through the first half, like really pounding the music. And, you know, we were getting a lot of complaints, and not just people, you know, texting or phoning, but like people were grabbing me at the game and saying, you're killing me. I can't, like, and they were missing the sounds of the squeaks of the shoes. They were missing stuff. And so, you know, Jason and, you know, we were taking all this in, and we were trying to calibrate it in real time as the game was going on. You know, I do have some very emotional feelings about how that first game went, but like I say, it's work. And we were working very hard at that first game.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people not happy.
Which
is not how you want to start.
But the game couldn't have finished in a better way, though. I mean, that was an amazing finish for the first game.
The beast with the putback.
Yeah, it was the local guy. I mean, that was, you know, and I haven't talked to Chad. Like, I talked to Chad before, and we offline talked about, we both knew everything, and we didn't mention it online just because of the, you hadn't announced it yet, but I haven't talked to him yet. But I know, I spoke with, you know, Coach Taylor, I spoke with Simon, and they both mentioned that moment, specifically how important it was for Chad. And this guy's played all over the world. So to now come home, he's played so close too. He played in Saskatchewan. He's played so close to being home, you know? And I know that was so important to him. And he mentioned it offline when I interviewed him.
Well, you watch him after he scores. He charges back to center court. And then he gets mobbed, and the crowd realizes that he was the guy.
Yep.
And everybody erupts. It's amazing. And I mean, listen, even for the local players, you know, even Simon had some very, very strong games where he made a significant impact.
Big time.
That's why, you know, I said, I went to the, opening ceremonies of the PBA, and I said to all the kids, and you know, it was all the different age groups, I said, you know, something could happen here where one or more of you break out and you elevate yourself to U Sport, and you elevate yourself, you can play pro at home in front of your family. And like, that's amazing. That's so great to be able to say.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And I've said this many times, the CBL, I've been following them since their inception, obviously being a basketball fan, knowing the past history of Canadian basketball leagues, which were not ran anything like the CBL is being ran now, which is much more like a CFL. It's a true Canadian league. The work that they've done in pushing through the pandemic, in growing the league the right way and connecting with the right people, whether it be Canada Basketball, U Sport, like you mentioned at the beginning there, the idea of having U Sport players play on their rosters and that also not affect their eligibility is genius. That's like an absolute genius play. And they've just done it the right way. But I was talking to Coach Taylor about this on when I interviewed him, and then I said, but the Sea Bears, like we kind of like the leaders of the league now, like as far as like setting the tone, the new tone of the league. And he mentioned that I think it was the Stingers are trying to get into the Oilers arena now, and like people are, which is great. Like this is exactly what you want, because say what you want, it's great where that we're the ones who kind of are pushing the league to be better, and that's awesome. But all of that is built on what the league has done before, right? And they've allowed this opportunity to take place and allowed Chad to score that bucket. And I think the cool thing is that moving forward, like you just mentioned that PBA conversation, that kind of connection to the community and to the right people in the community is how you actually grow a franchise and a league properly, right? In especially in a market like a Canadian market. So on that note, I wanted to kind of talk to you about the community aspect of it, since you brought it up. What, go ahead, do you want to say something?
Well, I was going to say just to underscore your point. So Calgary in 24, Calgary is going to open at the Saddle Dome,
Okay.
and they'll see how that goes. But they've got a great ownership group in Calgary, and they and it's Calgary used to be the Guelph franchise,
Yes.
and
Yeah,
Guelph moved to
yes.
Calgary, and they have local ownership, and they're very, very committed to their community. Edmonton, has also done an amazing job in the community. Vancouver now has two local owners based in Langley, and they're very, very big community people, as is the Scarborough ownership. So yeah, I mean, I think that I think there is a big evolution happening generally, but there is a big, big acceptance that our longevity is directly linked to
Yes.
successfully planting ourselves within the community.
Correct.
Um,
Correct.
and you know, if you go back to your question about the frenzy and the timeline of getting started, I mean, we sort of function with a loose set of values, and community is a crucial core value of our organization. We just did not have time. We simply did not have time to get ourselves properly organized. And even well, I mean, we did a number of, like, a whole bunch of community things. But this is going to be sort of a slow trajectory as we build the organization. I was just at the Winter Sea Bears camp that we had when Mike Taylor was in Winnipeg. And I was at one in the summer at a Boys and Girls Club in South Winnipeg, and I think we had four Boys and Girls Clubs at Sport for Life Center. Now, this is rec basketball, but this is they this the faces on these kids, where they were getting to be able to come to our facility to meet Simon Hildebrand, and I think Justice was there, and Josh Reddy, is I think helping Basketball Manitoba grow the sport, from people who are not currently playing basketball. And then, of course, there's the more developed, organized level of the sport, where we're doing coaches clinics, And you know, Mike is actively participating with that, and that's an aspect that we have to build as well. Mm-hmm. So our plan is to spread our wings significantly. We have to, you know, we have to be mindful of our capacity and our ability. We're getting a million requests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're working with Buckets and Borders, and we're sort of trying to be grassroots. And you know, I mean, there's so many things we want to do. We have to manage expectations, and there's so much demand, which is fantastic, because it means that lots of people want to be involved with basketball in some
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
And we just, you know, we just have to do it. Like I say, it's managing expectations, and we want to do it well. We want to do it sort of the Sea Bears way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well said. I think the word that when you were talking and explaining kind of the vision and the challenges, I see the franchise as being inspirational, right? You're inspiring people and kids to be involved in basketball, right? And that's going to grow the numbers. And again, we know that very few people play professional basketball, but if more people are playing basketball, the likelihood that you're going to have more Winnipeggers playing on the Sea Bears down the line, and then more Winnipeggers playing at the University of Winnipeg, University of Manitoba, and then more, you know, it's just the support comes from the community, but you're at the top inspiring the community, right? And I think that's kind of how I see a professional sport, and especially what the Sea Bears have done so far. Like, I guess if people legitimately, like we open up the conversation with talking about the Bombers, right? And how, like, and my mom's like a insane Bomber fan. Well, I mean, if all things go right in less than 10 years, I could see people, you know, being legitimately like, no, we're big time Sea Bears fans. Like, because in the first year, people love basketball so much. People love basketball, they love basketball. And in the first year, Sea Bears have done such a good job of just being that inspiration. If like you said, you take the slow steps and you do the things the right way, over the long term, it's just going to build that inspiration more and more, and people are going to build that, have that connection to the franchise, right? And again, then you see the franchise as one and the same, because I would go to argue that, like, the Bombers and the Jets are like that, and in year one you've already seen some small sprinkles of that in a team that only plays for like 4 months, 3 months, you know? So it's very, very positive outlook when you just look at it just as a snapshot.
Well, I sincerely appreciate you saying that, observing that. We had an interesting moment. I think it was the last home game of the season. And by the way, you referred to the Stingers. There's another, now I'm mildly competitive. There's, because of how we finished the year, our final home game and the playoff game, there's another word that I put in front of this word Stingers. but we had,
you're not so going to share that on the podcast.
Family show. We had to win our last home game to clinch first, to be in mm-hmm. first position.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you an interesting story when you talk about inspiration, because that there's two parts to that are interesting that we specifically talked about in our organization. We want to build a winning championship franchise. Make mm-hmm. no mistake about that. On the other hand, there's a value, there's a set of values about this that certainly from my perspective, because, you know, when the Bombers would lose in historically in my life, it impacted my life. I mean, you ask my wife what I was like after a, okay. And yet, you know, there's almost a Ted Lasso thing about the intrinsic value of the game itself, win or lose.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that final game, I'm going to give you an inside story. Our game producer, Kyle Goldstein, I think it was him, maybe somebody else, wanted to bring in a big confetti gun and shoot it off at the end of the game. And I said, well, you know, we could lose. Like, it might not be happy at the end there. And our staff and everybody said, well, you know what? It's the last home game of the season. We've competed. We had a credible team and an organization. Our fans enjoyed it and had a good time. We think that regardless of win or lose, this is a moment of joy. It's a moment of joy for us to, you know, have a big crowd and be enjoying a pro basketball game in Winnipeg. And we shot off the confetti gun, even though we lost. Which young David Asper would have not done that. And, you know, I know that there's an emotional part from the players, from the coaches. You know, it's a, it's just awful when you don't win that game. And maybe even more awful if they're shooting off a confetti gun and whatever. But we felt that that was a message that we want to be part of our organization. We are going to be competitive. We're going to try to win. But it's not the end of the world. This is a game. It is a game. And, you know, we want to try to keep that perspective.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. That's big time. That's big time. And it kind of goes to what I said there is inspiring people. Well, you're right though. Whoever said to bring the gun and absolutely right. You know, I don't know. I'm sure there are some people who are like, what the heck are they doing? But nonetheless, whoever wanted, I think someone just wanted to shoot the gun.
Well, it wound up being the right thing to do. And I'm very grateful that I've got all these people around me who, you know, who contribute and, you know, can influence my thinking. And, you know, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. And, you know, you move on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's well said. So we're getting close to the end. I do have a few more questions before we get there. As you know, I like to just ask some random questions as we get to the end. So you have, you probably have some good funny sports stories, but you had a whole season. You guys were running around trying to get things right. I'm wondering if you have a basketball story that you can share with us, a funny one, or, you know, I mean, you've shared the one about the gun, funny or otherwise, but something from the year that was meaningful, funny, or entertaining in some way.
So, okay, here's my funny basketball story. I knew you were going to ask this because you ask everybody. Before the season started, I think we might have been in training camp. One of the great things about our offices being located at Sport for Life is that the courts are right there in the team locker room and everything is there. And we were noodling over some big problem of the day. And Megan Noonan and I were on the court. And I said, well, maybe, you know, maybe we should think about getting some guidance on how we're going to resolve our issue by taking some shots. Okay, so now Megan, record holder, U of W, Westman. Yep. Okay, me.
Yeah, we open up the podcast. Moron, you've never played
moron,
basketball.
head moron on the court. And I pick up a ball and I drain three. Boom, boom, boom. And she can't hit the broadside of a barn door. And I'm strutting, didn't do a lefty. I might do a lefty on her next time. And she stood there like with her jaw on the floor. As I showed her my prowess, my shooting prowess. And so, you know, we laughed, we had a good laugh. We got, we got the issue resolved. But I have to tell you, I at the risk of, you know, never being allowed into by Dave Crook, I felt there was a little bit of a Bison Westman thing going on with me and Megan when I was draining those three shots and she wasn't sinking anything. Because I like, you know, when you say I don't have a history in basketball, the truth is that I was at U of M from 77 to 81. Mm-hmm. So I missed the national champions, but I did get to see Martin Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And legend. my buddy, Danny Snidle, you know, he and I grew up going to elementary school together. And then literally he grew up way bigger than the rest of us. I spent a lot of time watching those Bison teams. So, and you know, and those, that was in the era where the rivalry with the Westmen
mm-hmm.
was crazy. Like we used to, I'm not even going to tell you. So anyway, I feel that when Megan had to watch me, I felt that there was a little bit of Bison pride.
Got it.
Rising
got it.
Up.
I appreciate that. I'm sure you hold that over her all the time, or at least remind her, hey, remember what happened last time, right? Because Megan can shoot the ball. Like she
Megan can ball. Megan isn't yeah she's an awesome player.
Yes.
No, she's an awesome player. So I just keep wagging, don't you tempt me.
Oh man. So okay, well I have one more question before we go. Tell us what you can, but what can we expect from the future? What can we expect for the future of the Sea Bears? Like I know some things, I won't say them unless you say them, but just generally, maybe generally, obviously you've kind of alluded to certain things. And then if there's anything specific that, you know, that's out there that may be coming in the future, that we can look from the franchise.
It's, you know, at the end of the season, our coaches and Mike did an amazing job breaking down what had happened. Mm-hmm. Statistically, you know, player by player, game by game. And it was very illuminating to me to be part of that breakdown and then to start to say, okay, what's our path to be better?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Who does that mean? And we're in that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, as I said earlier, we want to be a championship organization, and we were not that last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know where that path leads. That's Mike's department. But I, you know, I think people might expect there'll be some different players on our team mm-hmm. This coming year. As an organization, we far exceeded our own expectations or what we expected. And there was quite a buzz, and we have to be very careful about making sure that the goodwill that we created sticks and that we mm-hmm. continue to be valuable. And, you know, the one thing that we heard from fans was that we've got a pretty affordable entry price. Mm-hmm. We put on a pretty good show, and they ascribe value to the experience. And it's really important that we continue to build that and earn confidence of more and more fans in Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of this is going to work. All the good things that we want to do, it's not going to work unless we can be a successful business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we're feeling a lot of pressure to, you know, not just repeat, but do better,
mm-hmm.
All across the board. And to, you know, not read our own reviews. Okay, we were franchise of the year, Yahoo. You know, that doesn't mean anything to an individual buying a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we just need to keep our feet on the ground and stay focused on value.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing that in many different ways. People will start to see it. Free agency is for unprotected, for players who were not protected by teams, is about 6 weeks away from mm-hmm. when we're recording this. And then wide open free agency is happening. And I think you're going to see Mike start to make some moves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's but like I say, it's, you know, it's the, when Jason and I looked at each other and we realized that, okay, you know, here it comes again. We're going surfing. Here comes the wave. It's amazing, and I'm excited. I'm super excited. I can't wait till the 24 season.
It's gonna be exciting. I think like I said, I just look forward to you know, I love origin stories. This is somewhat, you know, year one is still part of the origin story. You fast forward 10 years, or, you know, when the championship happens, and you're like, oh, remember, you know, that 23 season. And so it is as challenging as it has been. I think, you know, regardless of what happens next year with regards to on the court and things of that nature, if you continue to, because I know the basketball community quite well, if you continue to do everything that you did, regardless of what happens on the floor, you'll have the support of the community, right? Like you said, you want to get their attention, but you give to get, right? And you know, if the franchise continues to give and establishes itself in the community, the community, you know, I'll go so far as to say this: the community needs a professional team, and that's why you saw such a strong support, because we want it, right? Like, you talk to anyone, we want it. And the moment that it was announced, everyone was excited. Like, it was just an absolute game changer. And so I think if you continue to do the things that have been done, you're always going to have that connection to the community, as long as you keep that top of mind. It's like, we're here to inspire, and we're here to be part of the community. I think if you do those two things, you know, everything else will fall into place.
Well, I appreciate that. And then, you know, I mean, even when I was doing due diligence in the year before and I was going across the country watching generic teams that I didn't care about, the caliber of basketball was impressive.
Yes.
It was
Yes.
entertaining to watch. It was athletic. You know, I don't have to be a technical, you know, I don't need sort of special technical skill to know that what I'm watching is real, right?
Absolutely.
And so that was what we set as our objective for our inaugural season, was to be credible. Be credible so that when the basketball, when the people who know the sport come to our games, they will see that there is skill in this. And
Yes.
they may dispute, you know, there were times, Darcy, where I would sit in the stands. And I'd hear people yelling at the coach about, you know, do this or don't do that, or that was better, whatever. It was interesting listening. But it was credible, right? And so that's a good place to build from.
100%, 100%. Well, I appreciate you taking the time, sir. I wish you good luck next year in 2024. And you know, I think thank you is in order, essentially here. I know you don't do this for thanks. You know, you have a deep passion for sport, and you care about the Winnipeg community, and so that stuff is all certain. But that doesn't mean that a thank you isn't in order, because me as a basketball fan growing up in this community, like I said, the Thunder were here for what, how many years? I still remember going into that arena, and I remember playing Thunder basketball, and it
Remember
was a huge
Kaboom?
part of that.
Remember how Kaboom would hit the
Yes.
trampoline and slam the ball?
Yes. And that was a short period of time. And so I know that what you're doing right now is inspiring other kids, right? So a thank you is in order because of that. Like I said, inspire is the word that kind of sticks for the Sea Bear. So thank you.
Thank you, Darcy. It's been an honor.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.